Blog Talk Radio. I had a rather nice apartment there. I guess I became, this is the time when I broke away from, I was breaking away and becoming what I am now, whatever that is, I don't even know myself. But this was a place that it began in great a period of time, like, right before I went on television and radio and got involved with broadcasting. But I wrote quite a lot of poetry, and I wrote quite a lot of I wrote articles and so on, did a lot. This was the day, this was before websites were big, you know, it was, and before I had even developed a website, but I decided to develop a television show on a local access in a major city in Connecticut. And before I knew it, what I was doing, a lot of people liked, and I started to expand to different markets, and I became the most watched program in Connecticut for almost 10 years. We were introduced to so many fascinating people, but aside from that, I just wanted to say let me go back, step back now before I get ahead of myself. I want to go back now to that period of time in the late 90s, and when I wrote this, I don't exactly know what year it was, but I believe it was probably 97, maybe, or 98. Let me read this. Alan Baldwin. In a vision diluted by tears, I await clear view again for a celestial visitor, the voice of freedom, of wisdom. In the confines of an earthly prison, in the cell of the mind, the voice recants its call, and I am lost again. In the grand light of a dream, I walk under the stars and streetlights with old friends and cynics, virtue and vice. In a succession of time, I hesitate to walk in step as I feel the age of body listening to its warning. In the silence of the street, the heart beats rapidly in the rhythm of fear and atonal thoughts. Regrets of past decisions flash as thunder clouds of shame, bringing storm and rain to collide with peace again. A simpleton sings, playing with notions of contentment as a dark shadow lurks in the doorway. He grasps the ball and jacks, after hurling them into the air, and holds them tightly as I pass, taunting me with his grip on reality. I enter where future's light is dim. A street light glows a hazy halo. As I walk down the street, strewn with losses and debris, brown eyes begging as I walk past a doorway, long brown legs and fishnet stockings whispering their price, as Jesus smiles with his gold tooth and dangling cross, selling Maria and dimes, bags of paradise. Women lean out their windows as they look to the street, remembering or calling out to lovers, as children play in the stairways where homeless sleep. White men cruise the street for a trick and a bag of weed. All night dinners close suddenly from window broken and police sirens, ambulance arriving, return, ruined any chance of a cup of coffee. It's not. I move into the darkness as the remains of the night scratch at the door to be let out before dawn erases its nagging existence. And really like that poem. I did a television program with these poems back about when I wrote them, probably back in 1999. I'd like to read them to you. I don't know if it was the order that I heard them in, but some really, really good poems. I think they are. What about the moon? As the falling ashes of midnight glimmer the gold reflection of the sun, sequined sorrows of tomorrow will rise as dissipating fog that blankets the earth beneath the moon. The centerless abyss blackens the doorway from light as the leaning silhouette enters. Madness curls around the room. Madness disguised as musical rhymes, refrains as inane as your life, joyful as birth and dreadful as death. The lost spoken prayer summons the wind to kidnap the sound and carry to oblivion the last known part of you. When I wrote this, I was very much into understanding shamanism, developing an appreciation for the powers of certain talisman and certain powers existed. And I bought a unique charm, if you will, talisman, from a street vendor, and it was a beautiful thing. It was done in pewter, and it was carved, you know, beautifully. And it was the sign of invincibility. I wore that for a number of years, and I gave it away to someone so that they would be safe, you know, for the rest of their lives. And I believe she may even wear it to this day. It's called the talisman. In the light of an unknown power, forces are dulled or primed by time and the circumstances and substance of a man's dreams. A charm can ward off evil and lulleth secret desires, that whimsical nature of lust grounded by the force of life. Break the spell with the talisman's power, this amulet of rare alloy, carved by orbital entry in sorcerer's hand. A mystical meaning in a hand-held charm, protecting the innocent from malice unknown. The celibacy of hate sterilizes the air before the foul and evil power of rage can enter the ether. The talisman performs with its invisible rays that project out from a circle of sacred power within the soul. Signs of Sullivan's, saint's bones, crucifix, rabbit's foot, eagle feather, magic dust, incantations, and symbols of divination all conjure expectations. Shaman's dream. In the dreaded world of elongated dreams, reptilian smiles rest. Down in room the dead chanters, spirits guarding their ancient graves. Rainforests shelter shamans beneath banyan trees of dreams. Within the shaman's skulls, eyes stare downward into hell. Cat and carnivore familiars come to lead the wanderer's journey down, where the angered one deceives wandering souls by their own self-deceit. A grand cavern, a secret, sacred tomb of mass graves of innocent silent in their belief. Demons curse and guard these souls for fear of their revenge. The veil of death has been lifted for these and revealed the great mystery. In the center of darkness, the shaman's soul rises into his thousandth reincarnation. The music of a distant drum begins creating the rhythm of his heartbeat. It's interesting, this poem. I remember I was watching, I was rather in a desolate situation at that time. Desolate. I was beyond desperate. I was more desolate. And I happened to be watching a movie that came on television one night. And it was called, it was a documentary, and it was called The Borderlands. It was about the border between the United States and Mexico. And I remember it captured my imagination and made me think about where I was at that time. And, it inspired this poem. I live in the borderlands. Here is where despair meets the edge of the future. I live in a shanty without heat or light. I am without death or life. It is here that I am, and I do not know how I came, but it is here that I am. If I could hold the world responsible, I would. I would blame all if I could. I spoke to you tonight. You were all right. That meant all to me. I am writing to you from here, near the edge of the future, in the borderlands.
The nine muses are molested by derelict poets
whom take shelter in the ruins of Olympian temples and sell their sacred inspiration. Sold to the warriors as spoils of crimson battles won to sing glorious praise of barbaric deeds beneath the hot light of the earthly sun. Their silhouetted anger poised against shadows of forgiveness locked in battle by crude embraces and offensive movements of their bodies and souls. In the repeated silence of mourning, the cirrus sweepers press the brush of air onto their black canvas and paint over it a blue sky, green earth, and yellow sun. Artists sit in the cool shade of the cypress, basking as reptiles in the quiet air. They sleep, and dreams are defined by the direction of the breeze. Calling are the sirens of dangerous songs, erotic dragons smoke curling into the lungs. As corporations imprison the young with vice and obsession and debt and greed, under the lesser sun, in the rays of lust, the earth searches in primal instinct, groping for the innocent. The eastern winds blow harsh, hot air hard and foreign as Satan's wings raise, summoning dead spirits to prowl. The innocent lusts of virgins sing to the satyr's sacred flute. Then they are kissed with whiskey breath and fondled by calloused hands. They dance in the confines of his gaze, laugh, cry, and live cherishing their gifts, their happiness, until the lamplight dims and their dreams unfold. The saber teeth of magical monsters enter their dreams of fear until they scream and shudder and push them away. Ecclesiastical chants and mystical incense clear the room of evil spirits until the sacred one appears and guides their dreams toward the safe harbor of dawn. The next poem is what I wrote when I came into this area to live with, and the beauty of this area is quite something, really, I must say. But its people are fascinating as well, and it inspired this poem in me, and I'd like to share it with you tonight. This was actually published quite a good paper called the Voice paper back in 2000, I believe, 2001 or 2002 maybe. He wrote it in 2001 or 2002. And they published it and made it beautiful. They published it in their center fold. And it was quite long, and I was very, very pleased that they did. It was very nice of them, and they really liked the poem. They thought it was great. So I hope I can. I hope you'll feel it's the same when I read it. called White Fields. There are no sanctions in life. Each thought or action is balanced. Each day brings night. Each wrong brings right. And to the right of darkness is light. Rolling in level fields of white stretch before the wanderers of life. Every knoll has a vale and every depth has a height. There may be fences or covered rocks, mole holes or a tree here and there. The fields lie flat as white mats or carpets of dazzling colors. Images and holograms of attentive life darting in and out of sight. A spirit may wing by as a swift blast of wind or tread lightly nearby, embodied in the coat of a deer. A message of memory in a frozen fallen leaf, whirls at play near your feet. A dancing thought on the white field of nearly forgotten time, a time known to a single mind. White fields of winter, crusted over by ice, wind, and snow, melted by harsh rays of sun, or broken by footsteps leading on to the forest, or on into the horizon, on to a destination known only to one. White fields of melancholy places as blank expressions on white faces, a blank stare at the world where color dots the landscape, creating beauty to evoke complex passions. There are white fields that remain untrodden, outlined by the green borders of golf courses and cultured forests, where live snowmen and snow women and snow children and an occasional white stallion running or on white ground within the boundaries of white corral fences and white surrounding towns. White sounding towns. Towns of milk and money. Snow white people with Christian virtues suffering snowy spiritual hallucinations and discomforts of frozen noses and cracked lips chapped by the blistering boredom of dreary days of blinding white. They read sun-blinded blurbs on newsprint, snowy computer, and television screens, causing infectious white diseases of eye strain and migraines cured by aspirin, alcohol, Prozac, or cocaine. White fields sometimes turn to yellow and sometimes melt away from fevered heat. But in the Arctic and Antarctic circles and rural plains of snow and ice, white fields remain forever white. Through global warming may melt away layers of ancient ice caps and expose a colored history. White fields will remain white until the rains of change bring great floods to destroy all in anarchy. Then the muddy colors of mighty rivers overflowing their banks will forever change the once white landscape. So that kind of, I hope you like that one. That was kind of interesting, I thought. I enjoyed writing that. Most of my poems just come to me. Sometimes I work on them, and sometimes they just come, you know, and I have to write them down and possibly edit them later, or correct a spelling or something. But good poetry can be done. Good poetry is hard to say what good poetry is, but I always thought I wrote pretty good poetry. And I've been told that I am by people who know poetry. But I'm grateful for that. And I'm hoping that, I hope that my work communicates what it was meant to communicate, you know. And the next one I have is called The Promise. In the murky woods of self-kept promises, the days are dark until one promise is achieved. I walk in a gray dawn into a clearing of damp earth and rest upon a fallen tree, wondering where to go next. I see a snowflake flutter onto a left over a leaf as an idea caught by an aging mind. There it will melt or freeze depending upon the weather and wind and weather until the sun fully rises and the cold submits to warmth. I see a raven watching me as he squawks a mocking word coming closer in curiosity, then flies away with rude resentment. I feel the strength of the wood as the strength in me, and I sing to the sacred god and the muses of antiquity. I walk into the deeper wood half a day further on to where mushrooms and mosses grow on old trees. And I ponder for a while as I scent the musty breeze, when suddenly the world I forgot appears in my memory. Where the promise of the inner light dwells, and I can clearly see this place I forgot long ago when I was young and free. Great dark moss-laden trees with roots intertwined in each other's destiny, their height unstunted on the dim path of mortality. In their mighty treetops rest dull flakes and nests and birds of many species sheltered beneath the boughs. As they go about our day, going here and there, resting in a trance, waiting for our thoughts to dance. I walk further into the woods to find a place that interests me, a place that I may gather my thoughts as the birds would gather berries. The afternoon draws near again, and evening sets my course homeward. I reach in my pack for a snack as a reward for a promise I kept. I am what I am because of it. It will be what I will be in its light. Without regret or remorse, I am never lost because of the promise of life. This goes back a ways. Reasons. That's kind of having fun with words. I just love words, you know, and I play with them all the time. Reasons. Inescapable reasons keep coming to me. Reasons for being, reasons for doing, reasons for letting reasons be. By reasoning, I've come to believe that reason has little to do with me. Perhaps it is in the way I talk, or maybe in the way I walk. It may be in the way I think, I understand why I drink. It's not reasonable that I smoke. It's not reasonable that I toke. It's only reasonable to question reason, especially when it may be treason. Is it reasonable to love? Is it reasonable to hate? Is there a reason for? Is there a reason for when I'm late? The reason I see for reason at all is if someone should ask me if I'm being reasonable, then I can assure them I've reasoned at all. I've been called a reasonable fellow, and I've been called a fool. But every time I've been called a fool, it was always someone else's reason. Is my reasoning any worse than theirs? It may be. But one thing I've reasoned for certain, no one has a better reason than I do to come to this poem's conclusion. Did that one make any sense? I thought it did. I don't know why. I just wanted to get out of that poem. It didn't make any sense anymore. But you have to leave a poem gracefully. It's always hard. The beginning and the end of a poem, the two most difficult lines. It's another poem that I, whether it makes sense or not, I don't know, but it made sense to me at the time. listening to classical on the radio. It's all the same to me, piano, organ, or violin, notes as words to a symphony. I do not know the composer or piece. I only know the feeling that they evoke in me. The announcer sucks. He thinks he knows the language, but he really sucks. I hope I never speak that way, the way most fakes do, faking what they can't feel. Maybe one day they'll play my symphony, the new one no one has ever heard. I will call it Zamboritz. It will make music history, and only I will know its inspiration. It will have 6 movements. It will sweep, jingle, and jive, fall over and die, then come alive. Zamboritz, inspired by love, inspired by life, and felt by me. This next poem is for a very beautiful woman who I had the pleasure of knowing and many years ago. And her memory came to me one night. This is probably back in 97, maybe. No, 96. No, 97, I would say 98, somewhere in there. Quite a few years ago. But I knew this woman. I went to college, say back in the 70s. And mid-70s. And the poem kind of explains it. Her name was Mulu. In the dreams of midnight, where the subtle winds move, the mind... Let me start that again, I'm sorry. I wanted to get the right... to read it properly here. Mulu. In the dreams of midnight, where the subtle winds move the mind to the utter magic of memories, I travel to a thought of a lifetime gone, forgotten by indifference and time. There a beautiful bronze woman appeared. Her eyes were dark brown, hair raven black, and her lips supple with a sensual smile. Her body naked, sculptured in symmetrical perfection. I could smell the exotic fragrance of her skin. Then I awoke suddenly, but the image remained in the second vision of my sight. A vision burned into the subconscious eye. "Who are you?" I asked, but she did not reply. So clear was she as a realized fantasy, holding me in a dream of awakened desire. I asked her name again, to which a voice of memory replied. When I awoke, I felt shame at the faintness of my memory of a summer night. I strained to remember her voice, her eyes, and her forgotten beauty. A few more here. Inspired by nature, but back 10 years ago or more, and back my whole life, I used to do a lot of walking in the woods. I used to walk the streets, I used to walk woodlands. I used to enjoy walking, and the reason I used to enjoy it was because it would inspire me. I could see, buildings and people and places and the scenery and animals and stuff. It was was always, it's always, it was, and it was good exercise. I always enjoyed doing that. Haven't done as much over the years as I've gotten older. I'm getting a little more sedentary, and I don't like that. But I'd like to read this. A Walk in the Woods. A walk in a gray dawn into a clearing of damp earth. I walk. I'm going to try that again. I'm sorry. I kind of messed up that beginning. Courts can do that to their own work, not to anybody else. But anyway, let me go on. It's called A Walk in the Woods. I walk in a gray dawn into a clearing of damp earth and rest upon a fallen tree to consider the path before me. I see a snowflake flutter onto a left of relief as an idea caught by an aging mind. There it will melt or freeze, depending on the weather, or when the sun fully rises and cold mornings submits to noon. I see a raven watching me as he squawks a mocking word. He comes closer in curiosity, then rudely flies away. I feel the strength of the woods and its strength in me, and sing to the trees and muses of creativity. I walk into the deeper wood half a day further on, where toadstools and mosses grow on old trees. And I just read this one. I pause for a moment, recognizing a familiar scent in the breeze, when suddenly a word I forgot appears in my memory. There, the promise of inner light dwells, and I can clearly see this place I forgot so long ago when I was young and spoke to trees. Great dark moss-laden trees, roots intertwined in each other's destiny, height unstunted on the dim path of mortality. In their treetops rest snowflakes and nests and birds of many species. I am seldom lost with my compass. I am usually home by night. Regrets are mud and scuffs on my boots for my walk through the forest of life. Now, I haven't read this in quite some time, and I realized I had two poems and merged them into this one poem. And so if you heard something that's familiar before, then you'll understand why. I fell in love with someone, and I'm still loving her. I'm still in love with her, and this was many, many years ago. But let me mention this. Less a man is what I wrote, and if I were less a man, what would I be? Would I be less poetic? Would I drink less, smoke less, or sex less? Or do more or less. If I were any less than I am, I don't know what I'd be. Perhaps a leper or a CEO of a failing company. But of all I am, however less that may be, when I am with you, I feel greater than a king. Um, This was written back in about 96, I believe. 96. And it was a very difficult time in my life. And I, a period of many dark days, but also many bright parts of every day. And I wrote this one night when I stayed over at a friend's house on a lake cottage, and it was shortly after my breakup, marital breakup. This was about 15 years ago now, but or more. And but I wanted to I'll read this because I think it pretty much I remember writing it. I remember when I wrote it, and it was a period of time that was quite intense for me, and it was a period of time that changed my life. The Cantos of a Believer. I stood on an open balcony overlooking a wintry lake as the icy evening summoned the advance of darkness. I had forgotten the goodness of friends and shelter, safe homes. I had forgotten the ability to cope without the liquid or smoke. I was my dream, the enigma, the hurricane, the tornado, the crack of lightning in the void of the after hours. I was a spirit flying to heights beyond his comprehension, as Icarus, with wings of gossamer sewn with threads of faith and hope. The night calmed as the wind subsided, and over the lake arose a ghostly form as fog over the blackness. And the hours past midnight, I stared into the darkness, near the deep, dangerous edge, until I saw the sun rays of reason. And at the end of all I know is the unknown, and there I am, eclipsing the sun, but aware of the day, I create my own shadow. Seldom is a man so bold to engage in the creation of his own myth and legend. But if I don't, who will? A Song of Self. From the dark shadows of loss, love emerges, and a sacred self awakes. In the holocaust of hatred, we die or fall. In love, we live or rise. On a lost soul's journey, its horizon widens, focus evolves, and spirits strengthen. To the Song of Solomon, I write this addendum in love, loving self, all is love. From communion with women, I recreate myself and new memories of love. And from the love of a woman and her memory, I relive my passion and from it find resolve. I am without sin, guilt, or fear in the chalice of a loving memory. Spring is right around the corner. No, actually, spring is here. I should say it's been pretty springy lately up in this area. And I wrote a poem called The Spring. I'd like to play that. I'd like to read it for you. robins return from winter nests as spring winds blow warm over sun-bright seas of meadow flowers reaching upward into blue. Jealous winter warns of spring as the violent time of changing, when rivers overflow their banks and mudslides ruins winter landscapes. Winter screams its great March winds that threaten cold and April snows, then fade as haunting echoes and morning frost melting in the rain. What resonates true is the voice of spring from thawing brooks and greening mountains. Birds sing and flowers dance in brilliant colors with fragrant breezes. Calendars are turned a page to reveal the blossoms of May. Aries and Taurus begin their fight until overthrown by Gemini. And goaded by the ram and teased by the twins, the bull and poet resist their yokes of winter and fall and are moved only by passion and recent change. They wait with faith the return of their season, the lush hues of green and the warm light of May, when the poet writes of love and communion, and the bull mates as the world is reborn in spring. So, I got a few more minutes. I got a few more short poems that I'd like to read to you tonight. And so, I read that that poem about spring, but I'm going to follow up one. You know, it's called Virtual Storm. I wrote this when I was in the middle of a storm. And it was so bizarre because I remember looking out the window and just seeing it, the snow just kept coming down. It's almost like a television. You know, when it goes, you know, when it's all, there's no picture and it's all static. Anyway. Goes like this. Virtual storm. Yesterday the snow fell 15 inches in the northwest part of the state. Blackbirds, crows darting back and forth outside the kitchen window seemed confused of each other's size and shape and flustered by the incessant rain of white. They appeared as black spots flying through a static-filled television screen, though they were far away from the world of warmth vision. They were as holograms, a ghostly virtual reality. It had the same effect on me. Perhaps it was fear that inspired this poem, the fear of one day not knowing, unable to discern the real from the unreal, not knowing the difference because of cynicism or indifference. The fear of not knowing how I feel or why, as a subject in a micro study group, decide if blackbirds and crows can really fly or if snow can really fall 15 inches overnight. If you remember Alan tonight with this point, How blood red. I wrote this back in, probably back in 2003, right around the time of the Iraq War. All the nightmares. During the Bush administration and right after the Afghanistan and right after the Iraq War was announced. And seeing the nightmare that existed at that time in politics and the people that were just feeding off the white blood of our soldiers and the wealth of our country. So it became apparent who they were. And I wanted to, and I read this, it's called Blood Red. These are turbulent times of masterminds plotting and walking dreams, or waking dreams of revolution and a world at war, screams of adult victims and cluster bomb children. Arabian nights lit up by fire as oil fields burn and pacifists ponder imperialist powers negotiating oil rights disguised as liberators to plunder historic Eden. Freedom and liberty chased into flight, exiled with nomadic refugees disguised as desperate women fleeing to Pakistan, Iran, and Jordan, while they will plot resistance and revenge. Blood-red streets of Baghdad, blood-red stains upon the souls of Muslims, blood-red stains upon the hands of an American president, savoring blood-red wine with his meals in Washington. Blood-lusting demons of insatiable greed, brothers of the blood-red fraternity, join him at state feasts of blood-red meats and blood-red gravies, where they plot for power, money, chaos, corruption, world domination, genocide, deceit, war, and global destruction. Washington, D.C., where demons drink power and feast disguised as leaders of corporations, arms dealers, heads of state, lobbyists, and madmen, all members of the Christian right, blessed by their Reverend Pat Johnson Robertson. The Christian right blights the marble halls of the Capitol as blood-lusting cultists revel in the murder of the sons of Saddam, and lunatic hypocrites sing the national anthem praising the American Revolution as they smile in contempt at the angry voices of millions of patriotic Americans. And congressional power-mad cultists elected by Republicans and Democrats mirror their corrupt constituents, representing America's darkest ambitions, cowardice, contempt, greed, vice, corruption, racism, bloodlust, cruelty, ignorance, incompetence, and indifference. They allow the blood-red radio and television of the conservative media to control the nation with lies and propaganda, censorship and commercialism. Public relations firms are glutted by media pundits and politicians desperately seeking their service of public deception. Revolution, 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 revolution. How loud must true patriots cry? Revolution, 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 revolution. Or the dream of America will die. And with that, I'll leave you tonight. And thank you for joining me. And these are all written a number of years ago, many, many years ago, 10, 15 years ago, those poems were written. But I wanted to thank you and wish you a pleasant weekend. And see you next week. Good night. Here with Lila. All right, so good night, everybody.